Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
I'm Kathy Kayla. I'm standing in for Howard Feldman, and lots of messages coming through. I'm going to chat to Sarah Gon quickly, and then I'm going to get to your messages, because I think that there are such a wide variety of opinions, and I think it's important that we hear one another. You know, we shouldn't be afraid to have that conversation. Conversations that are unpleasant and that we definitely shouldn't be afraid to have is the one about Islamic State of Africa registering an NPO a month ago, and on the 5th of May this year they applied to the IEC, the Independent Electoral Commission, to register a political party. Do you think that there is a situation where democracy can actually be the very element that brings down democracy? Sarah Gon joins me. She's a former policy fellow at the Institute of Race Relations, but more important than that, she's a thought leader. Morning, Sarah. How are you?
Well, thanks. And you, Kathy?
All right. Thank you. So can democracy actually bring down democracy? Can you be so open? Can you have such an open society that it ends up working against you?
Yes, it can. But I think in this particular case, there are things that can be done. In the registration of a party, of a political party, the Electoral Commission Act, so it essentially falls under the purview of the Commission when it's considering an application. It may not register a party if the proposed name, or it's a little bit clumsily worded, but a proposed name or the constitution of the party contains anything which portrays the propagation or incitement of violence or hatred on the basis of ethnic origin,
so on the basis of Islamic State.
Yeah.
I mean, how would the average South African feel living under Sharia law?
Well, let's put it this way. I think. Let me put it this way. I don't believe he's done that because he's going to realize his idea of global Sharia law dominance. I think he's done it because by somehow he's watched how others have behaved, and perhaps the MK party is the most obvious. Is the party, being part of a party that is registered, he's not going to ever get the support. I'm not prepared to put my head on the block, because right now anything is possible. But he's using the registration of a political party to sort of immunize himself and his buddies from potential criminal action. That's because he has faced very serious criminal action, and he's had two cases against him, both of which one was withdrawn, and the charges were withdrawn, and the other one didn't happen because the police took so long to consider evidence that was very, well, certainly to my mind, you know, suggestive of murder, attempted of murder or terrorism, that there are two things that have to be done. I think one is one has to put in an opposition to the application. The other is to, at the same time, ask the commission for a copy of the constitution. But the name itself is suggestive of only one thing, and that is terror and mayhem. But the other thing that I think has to be done in this particular case is to put pressure on the Commissioner of Police to investigate why these two cases didn't happen. Because, you know, in the latter case, the charges were withdrawn because the police failed to obtain a search warrant. Now, that has to be done. It's a constitutional right not to be searched, and which lead to a charge. You know, it's a privacy issue. On the other hand,
but surely privacy is secondary to crime.
Well, the problem is it's not. If a crime is proven, if he'd actually been found guilty of either of these charges, we wouldn't even have had to have this conversation. But the point is that they found large amounts of ammunition, which they explained as being for hunting. And my sense is, but I think it needs to be investigated and tested, is that the potential for violence and possibly imminent violence should have been a real factor in the circumstances. And given all the circumstances of this man being sanctioned by the US for for involvement and funding of terrorism, including the terrorism that occurred in northern Mozambique, which has been horrific and very much the hallmark of a Islamic State organization. So, and the very fact that he's called it Islamic State, you know, that there is only one thing one can attribute to that, and that is an organization who believes in violence to achieve an aim.
Well, I think that he said as much in his
press releases, etc. So I think there can be pushback, but I just think it's worth, you know, interested parties pointing this out to the Electoral Commission just in case they've missed the connection.
Yeah. Sorry, maybe you also, I've got another question for you, which is completely unrelated. Mm. But did you watch last night what happened with Donald Trump and Cyril Ramaphosa? Mm. So a lot of those clips that Donald Trump showed were of Julius Malema. Mm-hmm. We know, no stranger to controversy. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Some going as far back as 2016. Yet he's never actually been sanctioned. Right? Mm. In the last case, I think that judgment was reserved. Why is that, do you think?
Well, you know, you do have, clearly the recent judgments have taken a view that this sort of speech is part of the political process, part of the, pardon the expression, the armory of political discourse. If I can just say that I think, to slightly divert, I think what did come out from those clips, because we've all seen those clips in news reports over the years, both Julius Malema and that protest with the crosses. And what it highlights more than anything is less that you take legal action, but that the ANC as the leading party until last year, but still the largest minority party, never condemned it, never spoke out against it.
And they're not going to.
Effectively endorse it. And they're not going to because they don't have a problem with it. I mean, Cyril has not been sympathetic to either issues. In fact, in a way, it's Malema is doing it almost as a proxy to the ANC because there's a lot of the ANC that feels this way. And what essentially this rather bizarre ambush by Trump pointed out was that, and this is very often the things with egregious behavior like this, is that you don't necessarily have to go to as far as having to take it to the court. But if your government that is supposed to be responsible for the well-being of your country has not spoken out and not condemned it and not essentially created a counter-narrative that people can get behind, everything was glaringly obvious. I mean, that protest, I remember, you know, we all remember seeing it broadcast on the news. It was very moving. It wasn't violent. It was, I think, if I remember correctly, it took place in Natal. And Ramaphosa had obviously never seen it. So he had no idea the context of it at all. And that emphasized the lack of attention to this issue because he himself has said things that are dismissive of it in the past. And he may have been briefed about it and assumed he would be alluded to. But I think the sort of dog and pony show that trampled off there was nothing he could really say to it. And I don't think that did him any good whatsoever.
Yeah. Sarah, that is where we leave it. Thank you very much for your time. Have a wonderful day.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. That is Sarah Gonne, thought leader and former policy fellow at the Institute of Race Relations.